Welcome to Imperfect Momming. Our children are constantly looking to us for examples. The term role model doesn't quite cut it here. We are shaping their worldview with every move we make. You see, it's not in the lectures we give or moments where we are actively attempting to teach them. It's in the micro movements we make, the unconscious ways in which we navigate life. We are constantly teaching our children how to show up for themselves, their friends, their future partners, and even their future children. So what can we do to ensure we are raising thoughtful, compassionate, self-aware human beings? We have to become them ourselves. No one is perfect, but we can still all be better, and it starts with self-healing. Let's get to it. Welcome back to Imperfect Momming, and we have a special guest today, Christina Rizzo, I think.
Yes, you got it.
I didn't confirm before we started, which I usually try to. So, well, welcome, Christina. Why don't you tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Sure. Great. Thank you so much for having me today. My name is Christina, as you said, and you've got it right. I am a single mother. I have a teenage son. I work as a transformation coach, specifically with women who are going through breakups or divorces, separations, things of that nature. And they want to take, you know, their power back. They want to take control back over their lives after a situation like that. Because as we know, it's very disrupting when you go through a situation like that. And often we can feel like our life has just been thrown upside down. So that is specifically who I work with. But in a former lifetime, which was not that long ago, actually, I was a special education teacher. So I worked with teenagers for 9 years. And then I moved into a specialist field where I did programming for students with emotional disabilities of all ages. Because it was district wide.
Yeah. Awesome. And where were you 7 years ago? Because I needed your help.
I know. I should have branched out sooner, I think.
Right. Like, well, I mean, it's your fault that I didn't have support.
I know. God, shame on me. What was I doing with my life?
I would have known Alicia needed you, but whatever. It's fine. I made it.
Thank God, right? Woo.
So what do you want to talk about more? Cause I could go into either direction. Honestly, the emotion, children managing their emotions is a thing. Adults managing their emotions is a thing, and women, healing from, relationships is absolutely a thing. So, whatever's on your heart, I'm good with, we can go with that.
Yeah. I think, speaking to moms in general is a really important because we are, you know, no matter if we are a mom in a relationship or a single mom, we are our kids' role models. So it's really important that we, you know, take the time to focus on our healing, whether that healing stems from your relationship ending, whether it stems from a significant event you experienced in childhood, whether that stems from, you know, just having people in your life that aren't the best for you. You know, whatever we do impacts our children, even if we think we can hide it. Because, you know, as moms, we try to hide things from our kids, shelter them through our experiences because we want to protect them and nurture them, but they can still see things. Children are so smart. So I think when we talk about doing things for ourselves, it has a positive impact on our children because we become happier. And then not only that, we kind of lead the way and show children how to work on themselves and that it's okay for them to struggle or to be dealing with something difficult and to, you know, work through it too.
Yeah. I mean, we're all human. And I think that it's really important that we understand that our parents are human, that we're human and our children are human. And therefore we all make mistakes. Like that's part of humanity. And we have to make mistakes, but also learn from our mistakes because there's lessons inside everything that we do.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, no matter what we went through growing up, many of us did have difficult experiences in our childhood. Mm-hmm. Just like you said, is so true and important to remember that, you know, no matter what we experienced as kids ourselves, it doesn't mean that it was okay or acceptable, but the adults in our lives were doing the best that they could do with what they knew as well. Right. You know, so it's important to practice empathy for that as, you know, as well.
Yeah. And I know that like a lot of the things that we went through in our childhood, and some are more extreme than others. And I think the severity is irrelevant when you're looking at the, when you're looking at the, for the lessons, like there's lessons in, you know, this level of trauma, and there's levels in this, you know, there's lessons in this level of trauma. And so no matter what, there's lessons. And that's why I say it's irrelevant, the severity of the trauma. But you know, a lot of, one thing that my coach likes to say is that, we are often grateful for the lessons that we learned from the situation, but hateful to the teacher. And it, you really can't do both. Like you can't, you know, hate, like, I know part of your story is that you went through a breakup, right? And so it's like, you know, if you were to hate your ex for the breakup and for all the stuff that you went through during that, but now you're helping women through it, like he's the reason that you're helping women through it. Like he gave you a new career, right?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, really what example am I setting if I am, you know, feeling hateful towards someone else in my life? That doesn't mean that you don't have negative feelings pop in even when you've done the healing work, because there's layers to healing and letting go. Of course, it's very natural and normal, but you work through them. And if I'm not working through them, then I'm really not probably the best person to be coaching women on moving on with their lives, because we should be moving on with our lives and not hanging on or holding on to the past and letting it have power over us anymore, letting them have power over us anymore, letting them be free too, just as much as we need to be free. Because, you know, with my ex-husband in particular, you know, I've dated guys too, but speaking in regards to my ex-husband, you know, when we broke up, it wasn't pretty and he had an affair. Many years later, you know, he apologized for it. I had already forgiven him and moved on. It wasn't needed at the time. Of course, it was extremely appreciated. That was a very nice thing for him to do and good for him too, I think. But I had done my own inner work anyway. So, but I can say that, you know, even though we might look at him and judge him like, oh, he did the bad thing. So, you know, he deserves to pay. Like he definitely still has beat himself up over something that I have long ago forgotten and forgiven, you know? So even though other people hurt us, like they do often beat themselves up over what they did too. So we don't need to harp on it or make it any worse,
right? You know,
for anybody.
Yeah. And I mean, they're living in their own torment, and that's why they say that, you know, the best revenge is to live well. Like if you're, you know, trying to shame them into feeling bad about what they did to you, it's literally like swallowing poison and expecting the other person to die.
And right.
I'm sure you've heard that phrase. I don't know where that comes from, but yeah. My son the other day, he's 9 years old and he's extremely brilliant. And he put on a shirt from a school that he went to when he was younger. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of things that happened at that school that he didn't appreciate. And that had I known earlier, I would have taken him out a lot earlier. And, you know, but he put the shirt on and he said, I really forgive them. And I said, well, that's nice that you forgive them. And he said, yeah, it would be nice if they would apologize to me though.
Yeah.
And I said, you know, it actually is a really good sign of maturity to be able to forgive somebody who hasn't apologized and doesn't, and especially if they don't even think they did anything wrong.
Yeah. Especially as a kid, you know, that's huge.
Yeah. Yeah. And I've got a similar, apology from my ex-husband, and, you know, there had been for a long time, there were good days and bad days of whether or not I was feeling resentful to him. Mm-hmm. And eventually in the last 3 months, I forgave him and let go of the resentment of being a single mom, because that was a big thing that I resented. It wasn't something that I ever wanted. I wanted mom, dad, baby, and family, right? And that was what I wanted when I said I wanted a baby and wanted to have a baby with him. So obviously that's not what happened. So I had a lot of resentment because of the way that I was holding on to, you know, the things that I can't do now.
Yeah.
And I was resentful of the freedom that he had when, you know, from his perspective, he doesn't see it as freedom. He sees it as, I don't get to see my kid. Mm-hmm. And so that was a big realization for me, as well as some of the things that I would get irritated about from him is that he was doing things differently than the way that I do them. Mm-hmm. So I was resenting him for not being me. And
that's a good way to put it.
Yeah. I got a cramp in my back. Stop. So, yeah, I mean, and when I thought of it that way, it was like, oh, okay.
It's a big shift too. It's kind of freeing. It's like, oh, wow. Okay. I can let that resentment go now, you know, because I reframed it.
Yeah. If you're watching video, I'm squirming around because like there's this pain in my side and I'm trying to get into a position where it'll stop. Anyway. So every once in a while, you know, you just get like your body starts talking to you or something.
Yeah. I'm like, hey, it's like, stretch me right now in the middle of an episode.
I'm busy. Anyway, so what do you feel like the biggest thing that your clients struggle with? If there's one thing that you had to name,
you know, I would say, releasing guilt is a big struggle for women in particular. They feel guilty or, forgiving. So guilt and forgiving are two difficult concepts to work through. But when they do, it's so, so big and they can finally move on, you know, and like, I would say forgiving and guilt. But guilt because, like you mentioned earlier, you had expectations or a desire to raise your family in a certain way, and then that didn't happen. And as women, we can feel guilty, like, why couldn't we make that happen for our kids? You know what I mean? So we take on a lot of the things that happen to us, and we feel bad because we feel like we're, you know, disappointing our kids, or letting our families down, you know, when you get married. And then I know women who want to get out of relationships but haven't, because then they're afraid. I know at one point I was worried about that too. And I just got to the point where I was like, I don't even care. You know, I gotta make this decision, because in the end it's gonna be for the best. And if people care for me, they're gonna understand. And I'm probably playing it up in my head more than is true.
Right.
You know, then what the reality is going to be. But there's that sense of, you know, guilt about, you know, being a failure because it didn't work out. And, you know, I think divorce and relationships ending are much more common now. So it's a little bit more acceptable, even though maybe we still feel that level of guilt. But, you know, what, 10, 20, 30 years ago, it was really looked down upon to go through a divorce. You barely knew anybody that,
right.
That, you know?
Yeah. And I'm a big proponent of, you know, if you can, let's see how I word it or the best way to word it. I think that if two people are willing to work on the relationship, then work on the relationship. Mm-hmm. But if one person is unwilling, it's not going to work, because it takes two to make a relationship work. And there is never just one person with the problem, which was a lie that I was told. that I was the problem in the relationship. And so I worked to fix myself, and which, you know, I don't regret that in any way, shape or form, because every little bit of therapy and coaching that I've and books that I've read to improve myself has been a benefit to me and to my son and in my life and to everybody that knows me. Like, there's nothing that I regret about that, but it was absolutely a lie that I was the problem and, or that I was the only problem. And so, like I said, if two people are willing to work on the relationship, then work on the relationship together, work on yourselves individually and the relationship. But if one person's not going to work on it, then, and you're unhappy, and working on you isn't going to make you happy in that relationship, then get out of the relationship. Don't stay for the kids.
No.
And because, like, I've heard women say, if I didn't leave him, I would have killed myself. And you don't, like, even if it's not that extreme, because that's an extreme.
Right.
Right. But even if it's not that extreme, like, your happiness matters.
Yeah,
it matters to you, and it matters to your kids. And your kids, regardless of how good you are at pretending, know, or at some point will know, that you stayed for them. And what kind of guilt are you creating for them?
Exactly. Which is more guilt that will need to be worked through by them.
Right. And we'll have lots to do.
Yeah.
With lots of clients.
You know, and what's crazy about stuff like that is we don't often understand that what we're feeling is, you know, is attributed to that event from our childhood. We'll bury it. So then it takes a while to uncover that connection to something we're experiencing today, to this event happening when we were younger, being the triggering event that is still connected to some of the decisions we're making, you know, today. So it makes it even more challenging to uncover those layers. They take time and effort, you know, which is a great feeling when you uncover them. But if we can take charge as women now and work on ourselves now, we're just setting our kids up for success, because life is hard and they're going to be faced with difficult situations, but they're going to have more tools at their disposal to use to be able to bounce back quicker, to be able to make good decisions that are for their benefit, you know, things of that nature, because, you know, they'll have been able to witness what we've done on for ourselves and taught them.
And that's one of the premises of the podcast, is that they're not listening to the lecture. They're watching the show. They're watching what we do to learn way more than what, than the lectures that we give to teach them the active parenting. They're paying attention way more to what we do than what we say.
Right.
And I, you know, I met a woman who was talking about her son, who had allowed a lot of people into his apartment, so much so that he was forced out. Like, there was no more room for him. He had given so much room to his, these friends who needed the space, that he no longer had the space and he had to leave. And he went to her and he said, and she said, you know, you can't just give and give and give until you're empty. And he goes, Mom, I watched you do that your entire life. That's all you've ever done. And that I didn't know any other way.
No. Oh, wow.
And it's like, you know, he's a 30-year-old man saying this to his mom, that's like, how crushing.
Yeah.
Like, so think about, I don't know if this would be so overwhelming, but think about what you do and everything that happens to you. How would you want your child to behave? Mm-hmm. How would you want your child to react in this situation? When they're, if they're ever in it.
Yeah.
And act accordingly, because if you, you know, the whole do as I say, not as I do, that doesn't work.
Yeah. You know, and that reminds me of another issue that a lot of women struggle with, which is boundaries, setting boundaries. So, you know, the more we work on setting our own boundaries, we set the example to our kids about how to set boundaries as well. Like that 30-year-old man who allowed his home to be taken over. He didn't have any form of boundary setting, right. You know, experience. Right. We didn't know what to do with that. So,
yeah. And it starts with us. It starts with moms specifically, because, you know, it's been my experience that more women are in personal development than men. Maybe I'm wrong. That's just, you know, I'm a little biased, but it really, I feel like, you know, there, my favorite quote from Big Fat Greek Wedding is when she says, the man's the head of the household, but the woman is the neck, and she can turn the head any way she wants.
Yeah.
You know, and so, but I mean, it's funny and it's a little bit true, because we are kind of the rudder of the ship of our family. And so the direction that we're going is the direction that the family is going to go. And so when we're focused on self-healing and self-reflection and learning and turning within ourselves and all of that, like, then we're showing that to our children, and we're showing that to our significant other. And if we have one, and it's there, they do what we do.
Yeah. You know, not just, you know, like, especially like in my case, not just, if you have a partner or you know, or you don't, you have children and you have an ex, you're setting an example to them as well. You know, your dads, you're showing your dads the way, you know, because I do agree with you that there are probably, I don't have any statistics to quote, but I think we can probably all agree that women are much more into the personal development area. And I think that's just a matter of a cultural thing and the way that we were all raised. Not that men maybe don't want to be into it and figuring out their feelings, but they weren't brought up, especially, you know, in the past generations, that it was okay to feel feelings. So they stuffed all their feelings down, you know, and they had to be manly and all that stuff. So I think, you know, again, as we moms, as women, we work on ourselves, we set an example to everybody that are around us, you know, that, hey, it doesn't have to be this way. Hey, why don't you try using this thing or journaling, or, you know, let's all talk about gratitude or what are we grateful for today? I mean, there's so many little ways we can plant those seeds, mm-hmm. you know, with people around us that it can be different. And, you know, if we have boys, it's very important because we're raising the future men. So we raise them to understand their emotions and to be able to channel their emotions and express their emotions. Then, you know, imagine how they're going to be as grown men.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't know, like, every woman I've ever talked to has said that it's sexy when a man cries.
Yeah.
But no man that, like, has ever heard that. Like, it, you know what I mean? Like,
we don't say it.
We don't say it. You know, I know that I've never, I don't think that I've told my boyfriend that it's sexy when he cries. Like, it's super sexy when he's emotional with me and he, you know, drops the wall. And when he shows, like, his super sweet, cute, you know, loving person that he is, right? Like, and I'm really the only one that gets to see that. And that's amazing. And the world needs to see more of that. And men need to feel safe doing that around women. Like, it's just, yeah. And like you said, you're raising the next generation of men. And, you know, and I've told my boyfriend is, you know, a kind of a man's man kind of a guy, you know, and doesn't, he's more of the man up, right? Mm-hmm. Don't show emotion, don't cry, yeah. Man up, right? And I've told Xander, I said, you know, that's my son. And he came to give me a kiss so if you're not watching the video, you didn't get to see it, but he came up and gave me a kiss and then walked away because I'm raising, you know, a boy who's in touch with his emotions. And I've told him that you're going to get the message in the world that it's not okay to show your emotions. And you might even get that message from Larry or from your dad. And I just want you to know that I am the safe place. If you don't feel safe anywhere else to show your emotions, you can show them to me. Like, I'm safe to show your emotions, and you need to get them out of your body, because if there's an emotion in your body and you don't let it out, where does it go? It just stays. Like, it stays stuck. And then it comes out on in traffic with people flipping each other off or cutting each other off. And, you know, like that, or screaming at a clerk at the grocery store, you know, that's where it comes out. And then you, there's a quote that says, if you don't heal from your, from wounds, something like you're going to bleed on people that didn't cut you. And I butchered it. It's all right. But
we get the message. I mean, and it's so true. It's exactly right. I say the same thing all the time. If you don't learn to process your emotions, you're going to take them out on somebody else. Like they're going to come out and they're going to come out in a way that does not actually feel good at all and could cause damage to a relationship.
Right. Yeah. In fact, I often have my phone on silent, and I was at the grocery store, and I was walking around. I was there for probably 15, 20 minutes and finally needed to look something up on my phone and pulled my phone out of my purse, which normally it's like in my hand at all times, which is why I can leave it on silent and not worry about it. I had like 7 missed calls from my boyfriend and a voicemail that was 11 seconds long. And I refused to listen to that voicemail because I'm afraid of what he said in the heat of the moment. And I'm like, I don't need to know what he said on that voicemail, because all it's going to do is put that moment of time where he was irritated with me and probably said something that was, you know, unnecessary like that. It just puts that in my head. And that's not the tone of our relationship. That's not how we normally interact with each other. And so I don't need that living in my memory. And so I just deleted the voicemail
instead
of listening. Cause you know, he was hungry and he wanted to know if he should order me something too. And I wasn't answering my phone.
That's funny.
Yeah. So is there a piece of advice, the whole episode has been little tidbits of advice of things that we could do and need to do in our lives. But is there one thing that you want to summarize from what we've been talking about, or something else that you want to give a piece of advice to the moms listening?
I would say my biggest tip or piece of advice, and it's something that we definitely will actively choose not to do all the time, is to listen to ourselves. Because we have intuition, we have a gut, and it'll send us signals, and we will ignore the signals because we don't want to face what it's telling us to face or to do. We want to be like, what? I heard nothing. I know nothing. I hear nothing, you know? But it'll just keep getting louder and louder and louder until we listen. Or something happens and then we go, I knew that. Why didn't I listen? Why wasn't I listening to myself? Why did I stay in a relationship that was unhealthy for so long? Why, you know, didn't I, you know, break up with the guy when I saw all these red flags? Now I have a kid with him, or, you know what I mean? Like there's consequences when we don't listen to ourselves, but we know the answers ourselves. And something that I think is really important that I work to do, not just with my clients that I work with that are like paid clients, but I do have a Facebook group and I lead boot camps. And something that I always talk about is, you know the answer. So whether that is, I launch programs, like I'd love you to join me in my program, but I want you to make the decision to join me in my program because you are saying to yourself, this is what I need. Like I like to empower people to learn how to unearth that voice and actually listen to it. Because when we listen to our voice, when we make decisions, it's so much more powerful than when we let somebody else steer us into a decision.
Yeah. It's so interesting that you said that, because the podcast I recorded right before this one, which might not air at the same, like back to back, but we were just talking about that intuitive hit where I, you know, my boyfriend thought that my son should get, be disciplined for a behavior that, you know, maybe the behavior was inappropriate, but there was like 15 different things that he tried before he got to the behavior to get his needs met. And And no, and they weren't listening to him. People weren't listening to him. Adults weren't listening. His friend wasn't listening. Like, everybody wasn't listening. And he had these five tools in his tool belt, and none of those worked. And so he resulted to hitting.
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't feel right about punishing that behavior, because he was desperately trying to get his needs met.
Right.
And nobody was listening. And like, what else are you going to do? Like, you know? And so at first I agreed, yeah, he should be punished. And then I would like, I felt that knot in the pit of my stomach. And because I do so much work inside my own guilt, I knew it wasn't guilt. Mm-hmm. I knew it wasn't, well, I feel bad for punishing him. It was like, no, I feel wrong. It feels mm-hmm. wrong to punish him. And that's different, you know.
Yeah.
Yep. Is there something that you teach? So 10 years ago, I didn't want to feel my feelings. Mm-hmm. I didn't understand my feelings. I didn't understand the notifications that my body was giving me. You know, is there something that you teach to women who are in that spot?
I always recommend journaling. I think journaling is the best tool for processing emotions mm-hmm. because, like you were saying earlier, if we don't get our feelings out, they're going to explode. Well, if you don't like to feel your feelings, then you're not going to want to cry, obviously, you know, because crying is a really healthy way of processing emotions. It's a release of energy, but you know, a lot of people don't like to do that, especially when we've been taught by society that, oh, you're weak if you cry and all that stuff, you know? So there can be some mixed emotions with crying, but I love journaling because I think one of the best ways is just to open up your journal to a blank page and just literally free write every single thought that's in your mind. Like literally, no matter how insane it sounds, how crazy it is, which is whatever you're thinking about over and over again, you just write it all out, because what you'll find is once you've written it on the paper, you've let that feeling go from your brain and it's out. So you'll feel so much more calm and so much relief, and you won't be ruminating on that thought again and again, at least for a little while, you know, because you've had time to process it, but you were processing it in a way that didn't make you feel out of control or which crying or getting angry, you know, even like punching pillows can be fun. That's another way to process your emotions. Something, you know, if you need to like hit a pillow. But I find that journaling is just really effective and really easy to do. I get a lot of positive comments from my clients about like, I'm so glad you told me to start journaling because I love it. You know, it's something that's really good to get in the practice of. You can even do different types of journaling prompts if you wanted to do a guided journaling. But you know, if you're just feeling some kind of way, I think just opening up a blank page and literally writing out everything you're thinking, not good, you know, don't make yourself right or wrong for any thought you have, just write it out, you know, set a timer, 10 minutes, just write.
And the old me would have said, oh, okay. And then I would have been like, yeah, I'm not doing that. Only because I was such a special person. I was so afraid that people were going to see my emotion or see what I wrote and then judge me for it. And that was because I did some online journaling. I was like, you're talking about journaling. I was like, I wasn't always this way. Where did that start? And it was because I had an online diary, and I loved the online diary because I got comments and it was like, it made me feel happy. I got the notifications. This was all before Facebook happened, you know, existed. But I would get these, you know, comments on people, and one comment on one blog, on one of these blog posts that was more like a journal, stopped me forever, because he said that whoever it was said, well, that's what you get for marrying somebody that you met within 6 months. And I was so paranoid that it was him that wrote that comment. Mm-hmm. And I have not journaled since. And if I have journaled, it's been on Word documents that I delete afterwards. Yeah. So there's, go ahead.
What about a book, like a physical?
Oh yeah, somebody could find that. You know, but I also, like, I don't have the ability to not cry.
Yeah.
Like I've been shamed my whole life for being too emotional, air quotes, for those that are not watching the video. I always forget sometimes that we're doing audio and video. And so I'm like, I just talk to the video and I'm using air quotes. And so anyway, but that I've been told my whole life I was too emotional. And so when that became a trigger for me, because I'm actively trying to not be emotional. And right. The fact that I'm crying right now is awful. And mm-hmm. I don't want to be doing it. So if you're telling me I'm emotional, screw you. Right. And I actually had a conversation like that with my hairdresser once, because she said I was being too emotional about this conversation we were having. And yeah, it escalated real quickly after that. We're still friends and we still made up, but
that is good. The other thing that's useful is to work on changing your beliefs. Mm. So your beliefs around journaling, your beliefs around being too much, your beliefs around someone's going to find your journal, like those are all things you can work on to reframe and reshape the way you view it mm-hmm. so that you can move through it
yeah.
in the future.
And it's not a natural thing for, like, we are not born hating ourselves. We're not born ashamed of ourselves. We're not born feeling all of, like, we're born with love and desire. We're born with, I love things and I want things. That's what we're born with. You know, and everything else that we feel about ourselves is anything other than love and desire for things is not natural, and things that we can work through.
Yes.
And let release and let go of.
Yeah. And, you know, having the awareness that you just had about the online journal and how there was that comment that stopped you from ever journaling again. Like, once you become aware of that underlying reason, then you can let it go. You can reshape it. It doesn't mean that it's instantly gone, but it might be. It just depends. But at least having that awareness means you can work through it and change it and release it.
Yeah. I'm interested to find out. I have a writing group that we meet on Thursdays and Saturday mornings, and we start with a 3-minute free write, and I have been deleting them. And so now I actually had the thought this morning, I was like, maybe I should type it on my iPad, because I have a app that, you know, has my calendar and it has my notes and it has my to-do list, and I paid for this app, so I want to use it more, and yeah. I'm thinking that might be a good place to write the my dailies.
Absolutely. I think that's great. You need to keep me posted.
I will do that. How about a book? Is there a book that's been exceptionally transformational for you in your life that's personal development or parenting related?
Yeah. So I'll go with the personal development route. There's been, actually right now, I will say I have 3 books. The first book I'm going to tell you was just, it really changed the game for me, because I had never thought about thoughts, the thoughts that we have inside ourselves, as something that can be changed. Mm-hmm. And I never thought that happiness was something that we created. I thought it was something that happened to people. Mm-hmm. So the first book, which is The Power of Positive Thinking by Norman Vincent Peale, it's a super old book. It was very Christian oriented. I'm not religious, but, you know, when I come across books, I'm pretty open-minded. But he did reference, you know, like Christianity a lot. So even back then for me, I was kind of teetering on the edge of, am I Christian? Am I not Christian? What are my beliefs? I was around 25 years old then. So I was kind of like, I kind of try to ignore all of those Christian references, just because I wanted, the messaging was what really mattered for me. But at the time I was still kind of kind of coming into my, what is my world? What is my view on spirituality? Mm-hmm. Then, but the messaging behind that book was so instrumental for me. It was like such a big aha moment when I read that, you know, if you don't like your thoughts, you know, if you're thinking negative thoughts, you can think positive thoughts, like you can actually change them. And then, you know, I started working through that. It's taken a long time. I mean, I've been working on myself pretty much every day since I was 25, you know, and I realized I can change myself. Like I actually have that ability to completely reshape my reality based on my thinking. So anyway, so that book was really pivotal for me for that reason, because I was like, oh, wait, I can create my own happiness and I can change the way I think. So that was huge. And then the other two books I'm reading currently, and they're actually kind of helping me
they're not balancing your computer right now.
So one of them, although I guess it's going to be backwards in the camera, but it's The Science of Getting Rich.
Yeah, I can see it. I can read it correct.
So. I don't know if anybody's read that already, but it's a great book by Wallace Wattles. I have read, how far am I? Like 40 pages in. It's not a super thick book, but it's proving to be very impactful on... It's a mindset book, essentially. And then the other one is, the name is escaping me. It's the guy that wrote Think and Grow Rich, but it's his other book about the devil. It's another mindset book, essentially.
Napoleon Hill, is that his name?
Napoleon Hill. It's a book by Napoleon Hill. It's Outwitting the Devil by Napoleon Hill. Nice. Outwitting the Devil. They're both really, really good because they are both... from the framework of like having money. So they're both wealth related, but ultimately they're a mindset book or mindset books. And the biggest thing I have really shifted in myself, and that was going to be my second tip, since you guys had already talked in your other podcast about like listening to your own intuition. My second biggest tip, and I can really thank these two books for really like digging that inside of me, helping me understand how to embody this concept that I didn't really get how to embody it before, is making decisions. So whatever you want to do in your life, you need to make a decision. The worst place to be is what I like to call purgatory, which is like, I'm not sure what I want to do. Like, I think I want to do this, but I'm a little scared. So I'm going to stay in that. So I'm like half in, half out. And, you know, that can happen. That has definitely happened to me in relationships, right? When you're like, maybe I want to be with the person, but I don't know. Or maybe I want to leave, but I'm scared. And you're kind of like waffling in this world of indecision. The best thing that you can learn to do is to make decisions. They're very powerful. When you make a decision, then your world starts to reshape itself around the decision that you've made. So if you decide you want to, I don't know, for me, I really want to become a full-time life coach, and it hadn't been happening for me. And I kept seeing other people doing their thing. But here I am still feeling scared, because working for yourself seems unstable compared to working in the school system. When you have a contract, you get a set amount of pay every single year, health insurance, you know where your paycheck's coming from, right? It's kind of scary to make a shift from here to here. But I realized that part of the reason why I'm not getting to where I want to be is because I really hadn't decided. I had a desire, I wanted it, but I hadn't fully committed to it. I hadn't fully made the decision. This is what I want. So anyway, I did leap with both feet and I said, I'm not working for the school system anymore. But I would say you can practice making decisions of all kinds, you know. Start with small decisions, you know, and learn how to be firm about them. Think about it, then decide. Don't just be like, I don't know. Practice making decisions. It'll help you have a more powerful experience in your life.
I think that's so powerful. And I can't believe that in your two pieces of advice, you hit the two things that I struggle the most with. And if I had the time right now, like we're running out of time, and I would so dive into that with you, but we'll just have to have you come back for another time. So
yes, I would love to.
Because I'll tell you what, I'm like, if I just knew what I wanted to do, then I would be unstoppable. And I think that part of the problem is that I think that whatever decision I make is the final decision and I'll never be able to change my mind.
Right. But you can, right? You can. You just need to pick one and go for it. And then if you're like, that wasn't it, then you go for the other. You know what I mean? It's just about the deciding.
And I have very black and white opinions about what creativity is. And like, when I'm in my creativity is when I'm the happiest. And I've really felt like that my writing is the creative path and that's it. And I like, there's no other option for creative path. And the reality is that this right here, what you and I are doing, we're co-creating right now.
Yeah.
And this is just as much fun to me as writing. And so I need to get out of the black and white feeling.
Yeah. But you know, again, like I was saying, you've realized that. So by realizing it now, you can shift it.
That's half the problem right there.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Having that awareness and then deciding you're going to shift it and it'll start to change. You'll catch yourself more, you know?
I will for sure. And thank you so much for coming today. And I wish we had 3 more hours that we could just but like I said, you'll have to just come back. So I appreciate you pouring into our guests and into me.
You're welcome. Thank you so much for having me on. I'm so happy to be here.
Absolutely. So we have another episode of Imperfect Momming next week. And until then, keep healing. Bye.
Thank you for tuning in to Imperfect Momming. It's time for us to step up and realize that our power is not in trying to shape our children. Our power lies in shaping ourselves into the people we want our children to model themselves after. Don't just do it for your kids. Do it for yourself. When you become a more self-aware, compassionate, and confident person, you and everyone around you benefit. For more information about me and my work, visit alishalyons.com. That's alishalyons.com. See you next time.
Views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the station, its management, or advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.